Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ron Martin. Boys, you took it without me last week. I appreciate it. You guys were good radio professionals in my absence. And I was in Vegas, having a good time doing Vegas things. Yeah, it was real good. But now I'm back in the studio where I belong, back doing radio, and excited to get into these topics. Do you guys want to talk a little Vegas before we get into the main show?
Yeah, baby. Tell us what we talked a little bit about your foray into Vegas. Tell us a little bit about what Vegas things are that you do. We're curious,
dude. So we always stay at the Venetian. They hooked me up with like a really sweet, kind of like Godfather suite media deal. So the hotel room is elite. It's high end. It's like pin drop quiet. It provides a thing that I love about any vacation, which is like great contemplative window gazing. So I get to like sit at the window and look out at the mountains, and it just makes me really happy. So like for a vacation to be great for me, the room has to be great. It has to be quiet. There has to be some like interesting geography for me to look at that's different than the geography that I look at every day. So that could be ocean. It could be desert. It could be like high places, cities, whatever. But yeah, so it's a good contemplative window-gazing city. We did some great dining. We went to this old Sinatra place called the Golden Steer, which is off the strip. Great steaks, incredible kind of ambiance. They have a dress code, which I'm a huge fan of. You're not seeing like anybody's bare arms or like any sweatpants that say like juicy across the bottom or anything terrible like that.
Which is a real shame that you had to change out of those before going, of course.
Oh, real shame. Yeah, real shame I had to take those off. But yeah, there's no inane music playing. It's all like kind of like low level, low light Sinatra. The food is plated in a very like 1960s style. Like your steak comes out and it's not like, you know how everything now at a nice restaurant is very like sort of daintily stacked atop itself? And then drizzled with some kind of orange sauce or whatever. It's very 1960s. Like your steak just comes out on a plate, swimming in its own juices. The wait staff are professional waiters, which I think is a great thing. I miss professional waiters, people who are like, this is my job. I do it really well. I've been doing it for 30 years.
You mean instead of just like something I'm biding my time at?
Yeah, instead of like something I've been doing it for 2 weeks. I'm trying to get a one act play produced or whatever, you know.
That's right. Well, yeah, in Nashville, it's I came here to do music, and instead, here's your burger.
Yeah, here's your chicken and waffles or whatever. But no, it was a really chill time. We went, we took an e-bike tour through the Red Rock Canyon, which was really beautiful, like a 17-mile loop. With these amazing people, I should shout them out. The company is readybike.com, like red like the color, and then ebike.com. John and Allison were their names. Amazing tour guides, really knowledgeable people, really fun people, good hang. So check out readybike.com the next time you go to the Las Vegas area. But it was real good, boys. Just some nice R&R, nice time with Double K, and you know, feeling good now, feeling refreshed.
I have a vacation question for you. I feel like we may have talked about this in the past, but I don't remember the answer. There are two types of couples who go on vacation. There's the couple who goes on vacation to escape everything, and there's the couple who goes on vacation eager to make best friends with whoever is in the suite next to them or at the table next to them or who goes on the bike tour with them. Are you a leave me alone person or a best friend person?
I'm very much a leave me alone person. And
this is not at all surprising. I just was curious.
Yeah. I'm there to spend time with one person and one person only, and it's KK. And it's funny, and it's gonna sound arrogant, and I'm grateful for this. Like I really feel like our friend roster is pretty full right now. So I'm not like looking around. I'm not looking to like sign people off waivers to the friend roster. So
tryouts on vacation.
Exactly. When we're going to get away, be with each other, do some high-level conversating, some good window gazing, and I'm not an activities guy on vacation either. So we usually plan like one kind of big activity. It was the Red Rock Canyon thing this year. Last year we went out to Hoover Dam, which was awesome. So I've got kind of one big activity in me during vacation, and then the rest of it is just like eating, chilling, pool, room, and so
things
forth.
That, things that are restful guy. For grown-ups?
Things that are restful for grown-ups. I bought a fedora, so I made a kind of knee-jerk fedora purchase in Vegas. That was a fun time. It was just good. So, and the flights were free. So we had enough points. We could get out there for free, and flights to Vegas are cheap and plentiful. So, you know, it's an easy place to get to. If you've got a hookup on a great room, you know, it brings a lot to the table that way for me.
Nice. Sounds like a great trip.
Yeah, it was good. Boys, let's take a break and then we'll get into these topics.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with Viking Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
All right, we're back. I had an experience two nights ago that I want to bounce off of you guys, just in the kind of category of like American phenomena. We went to see Top Gun Maverick, and the theater was packed. And I haven't been in a packed theater in a long time, but it was packed with like old people, young people, people of all like genders and ethnicities. And the theater was packed for this movie that like, by all accounts, was a good movie, but not a great movie. It was kind of the same movie as the first movie, which also wasn't that good, but was super fun to see with other people.
Thank you, T. Let me say off the bat, I'm so appreciative to hear you say that.
No, I know, but it was an enjoyable 2 hours at the same time. Like, it was a really, really enjoyable 2 hours, and I knew it wasn't going to be like a Daniel Day-Lewis movie, you know? It wasn't going to be like an Oscar movie experience. And really, Top Gun was a movie about like guys staring deeply into each other's eyes and like either being threatened by each other or challenging one another's authority or like menacingly chewing a toothpick. And it kind of made me wonder why movies like that work so well. I don't know. I just wondered if you guys had seen it and what your responses to it were. Big R, it sounds like you saw Top Gun.
No, I really struggle, man, because I, you know, the original Top Gun, when I think of Tom Cruise in the original Top Gun, I think of literally one of the most like despicable, like characters like that literally Hollywood could conjure up in terms of like people thinking that was cool is beyond me.
Oh, no, that's interesting. I want you to lean into that because that was one of my questions. Like Captain Pete Mitchell, good hang or not?
Oh gosh. I mean, it depends on who you are, man. But I mean, the whole, I'm playing shirtless volleyball. I'm doing this in jeans. Like I'm doing this high fiving thing with this dude that is like, makes me like embarrassed to like be a man. This whole thing for like, you know, and I have a need for speed, like everything that's despicable about anybody I would ever want to either emulate or hang out with. Like this guy is like presented to us in this movie as being like quintessential, like that's who I want to be. And I'm so baffled. I'm so disappointed and baffled by that. And then, you get the new movie that comes out and this is Tom Cruise's biggest opening of all time, like in his career.
Wow. That's right.
And I'm like, look, man, I know Top Gun has this. I know it's considered this classic and I know it's part of like, you know, it's part of Americana now. Like it's iconic. You know, I understand all that. I'm not here to argue. How do you argue that? It is what it is.
Yeah.
But I literally can't believe the way people are gushing about it. Like,
Yeah.
Like it is like this Academy Award, like greatest movie ever made. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. Like, it makes me disappointed in humanity the way people are gushing about Top Gun Maverick.
Dude, no, that's fascinating. Cause I enjoyed the movie and I don't have that strong of an anti reaction to it, but I think Pipe and I may have a gear that you don't have, which is like the...
Or you guys have a need for speed. I get it.
Well, no, I think, and Pipe, I want to hear you on this. I think we have a gear for like male camaraderie in movies that like you don't operate on that level, which is not like an aspersion. It's just an observation after knowing you for a long time. Pipe, where are you at on like the kind of male camaraderie dynamic in a movie like Top Gun? Because I got to be honest... While at the same time assenting intellectually to everything that Ron said, like, I teared up in the end. It did exactly what it was supposed to do for me emotionally. It, like, pulled all the right heartstrings, touched all the right buttons. Where are you at on that type of thing, Pipe?
So I just introduced one of my daughters to the original Top Gun, like, 3 weeks ago, so it's fairly nice. Fresh in my mind. I hadn't seen it in a few years because it's not one I go back to regularly, it didn't hold a nostalgic place in my life. It, you know, because it came out in 1990 ish, and I was seven then. So
1986, Pipe, but even worse.
Is it that early? Yeah. Okay, I was thinking it was a little bit later. Anyway, so yeah. Anyway, I was too young to have like gone and seen it in its heyday, so I caught it a little later. So without nostalgia, it lands differently because you just sort of see it through like, is this an action movie? It's a little hokey. But everything that Ronnie is calling despicable, I'm laughing because I'm like, that's why it worked. It worked because of all of the things that Ronnie hates about it, which doesn't make him wrong because I also agree. But the terrible grins, the high-fiving, need for speed. There's two likable characters in that whole movie, and it's Goose and his wife. Everybody else in that movie is like, they're awful. Just hands down awful people. But again, it works. It's the same thing, like, we've talked about James Bond movies on here before. I like all the James Bond movies. Well, except for any involving Pierce Brosnan. Everything about those movies is despicable too. You're like, wait, this guy has a license to kill and he sleeps with everybody and he has no conscience. He's clearly just a hired sociopath. Awesome movies. I love them all.
Yeah.
So there is something that Ronnie, maybe it's a conscience, I don't know, has that I do not have that allows me to kind of go, that was fun. And, but I don't get the raving about the new one as if it's the best movie. Because basically what I've seen, I haven't seen the movie, but every response is it's just like the previous one, and that's why it's perfect. And I'm basically like, oh, we've just decided we're going to binge drink nostalgia. This is a nostalgia kegger is what this is, and we're all just stumbling home, falling asleep in someone's hedges on the way there. That's what this movie is. Like, we're just drunk on nostalgia.
That's such a great way to put it. It is a deeply... like nostalgic kegger, and if you're of a certain age, you're drinking deeply of it, you're like doing the 5 minutes of explanation to your kids as to like the fact that Val Kilmer for like 5 years in the late 80s and early 90s was literally one of the five hottest people that there's ever been, and you're not even sure why you're making the argument, but it seems to matter in the moment. I want to do one more Top Gun thing, and maybe you guys have no dog in this fight at all, but I feel like we're in a bit of a valley movie star wise, like male movie star wise, and Top Gun to me provided a solution to our movie star problems, and it's Miles Teller. Miles Teller in Top Gun Maverick plays Goose's kid, and he's kind of the foil for Tom Cruise. They have to size each other up and doubt each other's abilities, and then they obviously come together in the end and it works out swimmingly. I think he's a great movie star. He's got broad shoulders. He's tall. He can carry a drink, carry a cigarette, carry a gun. You believe it. He's not dainty like the Toms, Tom Hiddleston, Tom Holland. He's got a little bit of grit and gravitas. I don't know. And he's got emotional range. I think Miles Teller can like he can do apprehensive and self-doubting, but he can also do like swaggering, you know, face puncher. And I wonder if you guys have comments.
At the risk of offending our, you know, British loving listeners and co-hosts, he's also American.
Yeah.
Which is something that we, like, what other, like, when was the last time we just had an amazing American movie star? I don't know if he's it, but I feel like he's got a good trajectory.
It's Brad and Leo for me. Like,
yeah,
but they're in late career. Like, they're like Jordan on the Wizards,
in their 50s,
you know?
Now. Yeah.
Yeah. They're picking their spots. And you know, as far as somebody who does like fun movies consistently, I think Miles Teller could be that guy.
One, I'm thinking about the Toms you listed, both just very British, and they pull off a convincing American accent, but they don't have the sort of like, I'm better than everybody swagger, which is pretty important for a solid movie star.
Yeah, and to me, there's an aspect where I need to be able to drop the movie star into any era, and he could function. Like, if you put Miles Teller into The Godfather in 1972 as Santino, like, it would work. He could play Rocky in Rocky in 1976. He could be Lloyd Dobler in Say Anything in like 1990. Like, he's there's a certain like timelessness there, whereas like the Toms really only work in 2022 to me. There's a time and a place for that type of person. And I don't know, Ron, do you have thoughts on the Miles Teller thing at all? Have you invested in that?
No, I actually don't really know who he is. I don't think I've probably seen him in something, but he doesn't ring any bell for me at all.
Yeah, dude, he was in Whiplash. Did you ever see Whiplash? That's a movie that I feel like you could dig potentially.
I didn't. I've never even heard of it.
Oh man, Whiplash is like a very Oscar baity but very awesome music movie starring Miles Teller as like this kid who his goal in life is to be a jazz drummer, like the best jazz drummer in the world. And he's like 22 in the movie. He's young. And he goes to this academy and he has this like super stern, basically abusive teacher who gets him to the, you know, pushes him to the brink of like insanity and despair and all that stuff. But he does become the greatest jazz drummer in the world. And it's one of those movies that begs the question, do the ends justify the means? And it's a great movie. And it's the rare sort of Oscar baity movie that's also kind of enjoyable to watch because the performances are so good. That's one you should check out. I think you would dig it.
Well, I'll check it out.
Yeah. J.K. Simmons plays the teacher who is he's always just sort of a character actor. And that was one that I think surprised everybody because he'd always been sort of a goofy guy. And in that one, he's this just over the top,
brutal,
intense, brutal dude. Yeah, really. That's like when Teller kind of burst onto the scene. What's crazy to me is he's 35. I kind of associate him with being like a kid, but he's like right in his acting prime.
He is. It's weird. It's a weird 35 too. Like, you could tell me that he was 25 or 45 and I would be like, yeah, that checks out, you know.
Which
he's
is
just
a
got
lot like
some
Leo
range there too,
frankly. Like, yeah, Leo was 25 until he was 50.
Yeah, and now he's very much 50, but
yeah,
but he had a good like 20 year run of being 25. Yeah, it's kind of crazy when they can pull that off.
What are the okay so just curiosity, who were the was Val Kilmer in the new one or no?
Dude, he was. And he
I know
was
he's
it.
Not doing well health wise, and
he's
all that
not.
Stuff.
But they did a really elegant job of like integrating him into the movie, and he's on screen probably only for 4 or 5 minutes, but it's really good, and they do a good job with like kind of the backstory of his character over the last 30 years, in that he rose through the ranks in a way that Pete Mitchell didn't. But he also rose through the ranks in a way that like kept covering for Maverick's idiocy, for lack of a better term. Like, so Maverick's this great pilot, but he's always breaking the rules, pushing the boundaries, getting in trouble.
Because that's what 63-year-olds do, man.
You know, well, exactly. Yeah. Most 63-year-olds I know have
Breaking the law, dude. It's
perfectly jet black hair, too. Like, the totally. Cruise dye job, I keep looking at it going, I want to see a little salt and pepper at the temples, at least. Like, give
Cruz
me that.
Will not give in to that, man. But it's so funny because I've ironically been watching. I've been clicking on YouTube interviews that he's been given at, like, you know, like
award
at, like,
shows,
you know,
and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, he's looking his age for sure. That dude is that dude's not getting any treatments. I mean, he's not doing any face work. He's not doing it. I mean, you see the 63 in him for sure.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center. May not be available in all states.
Dude, can we do a minute on, like, the Cruz pathology of a certain kind of aging guy? Like, Cruz is he's the aging guy that, like, he has to own everything. He has to be the best at everything. He's the guy with, like, 14 pilot's licenses, and he can drive a boat. And I look at it, and I probably have listened to a lot of the same interviews, Big R, but, like, I just, emanating from him is just this, like, thirstiness to leave my mark, thirstiness to let people know that I'm awesome. I don't even know what I'm asking.
Yeah,
here.
I know. I wanted to bring this up. Maybe this will integrate with what you're saying. I was wondering about, you'll like this, Big T. So along the lines of what you're saying, it's really, in some ways, I mean, you know, Cruz is, he's an anomaly, at least like in 2022, in the sense that, like, he's hit this late stage of his career where he has been through, like, a lot of guys would not have survived some of the bad press that he's gotten, right? And yet he has.
Yeah.
And again, it's not so, you know, it's not so much about Cruz as it's about the kind of movies that he makes that people want to see. I'm not saying he doesn't have anything to do with that.
Sure.
But it's fascinating to me because he, at one point, you know, if you go back 20 years, he was trying to make some art movies. He's trying to get that Academy Award. And then at some point, he pivots into the Mission franchise. And he's just like, all I want to do is be an old school Hollywood actor, director who makes blockbuster films. Yeah. I don't care about an Academy Award. I just want to make things that people are going to love. Nobody has to talk about whether I'm a good actor or not. Like, I don't need any of that. All I need is success. Like, so it feels like everything in his career filtered down to, what is success? Success is box office numbers, period. Yeah. And that, dude, that's all he does now. I mean, it's about those box office numbers. That's kind of fascinating to me because he's kind of old school in that sense. Cause that dude, they'll give him an honorary Academy Award one of these years, you know, 20 years from now, but that's the best he's ever going to get from Hollywood. Right.
Yeah, he's a great movie star. I mean, yeah, like you look at his body of work and his career, and there's a lot of bangers in there. Like there's a lot of really good, really thoughtful, really interesting movies. But like the thing that I'm the most thankful for with Cruz is that he's one of the only people left out there making big fun movies that aren't like comic book movies. And I think that's what people loved about Top Gun. It was big and fun. Kind of character driven and not about a comic book.
But I mean, arguably, it is a comic book.
Yes, it's kind of a remake. Yeah. It falls into that where like we're remaking old movies. But what Ronnie said about like he just decided he's just going to do blockbusters. Mm-hmm. Hollywood has moved away from that. It has big franchises, and it has like we're hunting the Oscar with an art house film about a mentally handicapped, you know, sexually confused
transgender
teenager.
Person. Yeah, yeah,
in southern France, like. So it's when he's just like, yeah, I'm going to go play Ethan Hunt for the 11th time.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's run that. I mean, I realize the mission is kind of a franchise. Maybe he's at fault for the franchise thing. But I don't.
Yeah.
I look at it and I'm like, honestly, like maybe that's what Will Smith should have done with his career. Like he started out doing blockbusters and then he's just kind of gone back and forth between these weirdo roles and like the occasional blockbuster that hasn't hit. If he had just stuck to I'm just going to be, we're going to do Bad Boys 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 or something like that. It probably would have worked and he would have made a ton of money. And it's fun. And people, it's a real, like, you went to the theater and so did 150 other people. That's pretty rare these days.
No, it's very rare. And to your point, he would have been a fun, Will Smith would have been a fun Ethan Hunt. You know, like he could have ripped off six movies in that franchise over 15 years and done really well. And, yeah, I think Taran's point about a movie like Mission Impossible, you know it's going to cost $100 million to make, but it's going to make $225 million. Like, it's going to make back all its money, and it's an easy, safe investment for a studio, which is why they keep making them. And they're fun. Like, you're not getting a sermon. You're not getting a social message. There's a place for a movie like that where a whole bunch of different people can come together and enjoy it, and you don't have
to. Well, and there's nothing wrong with that either. And so I certainly, and I, you know, I like mission movies and all that kind of stuff. So my point, my question though is this, was this Tom Cruise, it wasn't that many years ago where he was not doing well.
Yeah.
He was trying to make blockbusters that were not blockbusters. What's up, Jack Reacher? And, and there was like, he was really down because he was not like, from a social media perspective, from just like a public's perspective, he wasn't a person that anybody was interested in anymore. So to me, it's like, was this his way of just crawling back? Like, I don't care. Cause what's important if you're Tom Cruise is that you're in the public eye, you're making movies that they love to see, and everybody is smiling at the way that you smile. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, was this his way to climb? Like, it doesn't matter what I have to, in other words, if it took art house movies to climb back, he would have made art house movies, but that's not what it took him to climb back.
Sure.
Because at the end of the day, all that matters is that he's popular and he's making movies that are making his, you know, studios money. But I just wonder, like, he seems so calculated to me as a star.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I look at him as being a guy that is just like, this is a job. I enjoy it. This is what I do. But I really have one job, and that's to make studios money. And I'm just resigning myself to that. And that's what I'm doing.
Well, it kind of comes back to my lifelong theory that nobody famous gets there by accident. Right. And, you know, this could be sort of boiled down to pastoral ministry or just trying to be a big deal on social media or whatever. Like, all these choices that people are making are calculated, and you're either filtering them through the lens of, I don't know, authenticity or fidelity to some theological perspective, or just naked, crass, like, I want viewers, I want listeners, I want money.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, far be it for me to speak to where he's at, but that, you know, that may have been some of the thought process, which was, I'm going to bring back the most beloved character that I've ever played, you know, in a movie that, like, from a social perspective or whatever, nobody can shoot any holes in it. You know, everybody loved Top Gun. Top Gun was fun. It's nostalgic. It's 80s.
The Russians are the bad guys again.
Yeah, the Russians are the bad. Actually, that's an interesting 30 seconds pipe. There was a very amorphous and undefined bad guy in this movie. And like, even when they cut to images of like the bad guys' faces in their fighter jets, like they're wearing the kind of helmets that like obscured their faces. So they got around the like race ethnicity thing perfectly. They didn't even have to address that. So you never found out who the bad guy was, but, you know, it was just a bad guy and it didn't matter, you know? It didn't matter who it was.
Which is kind of perfect because the whole movie is like formulaic and like it's paradigmatic, and they're like, why label the bad guy? Let's just call him bad guy. You know?
It totally works. Well, and I mean, honestly, go ahead, baby.
Well, I was curious too because like this movie was delayed like a year because of the way movies have been. Yeah, it's been delayed for like a long time, and I wonder. This is literally just an honest question. Like, I wonder if it would have been released a couple years ago, if it would have had the same impact. And then number two, is there something about today, right now, mm-hmm. you know, June 2022, mm-hmm. that, like, because, dude, I mean, making a remake from a movie from whatever 30 years ago, I mean, that can be disastrous. We've seen that happen with other movies, and it sells like $20 at the box office. And the, you know, even big movies, right, that were culturally, you know, iconic movies. I wonder like what was the magic drop with this movie at this particular time that made it just go as bonkers as it's going? Because again, there was no guarantee that anybody wasn't just going to yawn their way through this and have it sell like $10 at the box office, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of that, and we'll get Pipe's take on it too. We've been watching trailers for this movie for 2 years. Like,
I wonder if that had something to do with it. Yeah.
Yeah. If you've watched any movie in the last 2 years in the theater or even on a platform or whatever, you were getting a trailer for Top Gun and it looked cool. It looked fun. It looked unchallenging in ways that seemed, to me at least, appealing. You know, like the last couple of years have been challenging enough that, like, I didn't want to go to a theater and kind of be pushed. And, you know, it just looked like that kind of movie. And to somebody's previous point about the enemy in the movie, much like in the first one, the enemy was really just sort of a red herring because the movie's about all these like chest thumping dudes, like stopping competing with each other and coming together for a common purpose. And that's kind of what this one is about too. Mm. So like who the enemy is really, you know, it's immaterial. But Pipe, why do you think this movie did so well at this point?
I think all the things you just said about the trailers and everything makes sense leading up to it. I think if there's one thing that every marketer has learned in the last 2 to 3 years, it's that all the money now lies in the hands of people who came of age in the 80s and 90s. And nostalgia is always going to crush. Like, mm-hmm. It's true musically, it's true fashion-wise, it's true in movies, it's true, you know, part of the reason comic book movies have made it so big is because there was a whole generation of people who grew up on comic books, and then they just, you know, so now watching, and now that's become its own thing, and they've introduced a whole generation of children to it, but, yeah, I mean, it's something like, when is John Cusack going to start remaking, like, Gross Point Blank and stuff like that? These things are coming back. And
I'd watch that.
Yeah, I know. We'd pay money for this stuff. So I think that's probably the biggest. But you have to do nostalgia well. Like you have to get mm-hmm. it to where it's the right amount of throwback, but the right amount of mm-hmm. like we spruced this up with things we can do now that we couldn't do then. You know, it's a little crisper, a little sharper, but still has some of that original feel to it. It's the right callbacks and cameos, you know, like you said, mm-hmm. the way that Val Kilmer was presented, it was done appropriately. They didn't sort of overdo it. So I think the nostalgia thing, at some point we're going to get tired of the nostalgia thing, but I think we've got another few years of just selling to people who are in our like mid 30s to early 50s, because there was just a couple mm-hmm. decades of culture that we're like, yeah, bring it all back. We want the music. We want the decor, we want the fashion, we want everything, and we want to introduce it to our kids. That's the big thing. We want to bring our kids to this stuff.
Dude, you know what's wild is that we're about to get back to 80s decor. Like, that's right around the corner. Like, I wonder if waterbeds are going to come back and all the crappy, like, kind of over-the-top, stupid decor stuff from the 80s. I kind of can't wait to see what happens there. But, because, yeah, mid-century's probably not got a whole lot of legs left to it in terms of trendy decorating aesthetics, but we're getting deep into the weeds of that, boys. I want to take a break, and speaking of bad guys, I want to come back and talk about some other bad guys. Let's take a break. All right, Pipe, you mentioned something via text that was fascinating to me, and I'm pulling the text up now, but it was basically something to the effect that, I don't know, weekly, daily, maybe daily, you get these tweets or DMs or whatever from random people accusing your dad of ruining their lives and just wanting to tell you about it, apparently, which is a thing that I find fascinating. It's also a thing that it triggers a very sympathetic response in me toward you, which is, I hate that you have to deal with this. It just seems like a very niche, a very isolated thing to have to deal with. And then I'm curious as to how you deal with it. So however you want to navigate your way through those questions, have at it, because we're interested.
Yeah, so yesterday was the most recent example. I got a tweet. So I tweeted about a book that was on sale for Kindle, which is a thing I do with great regularity. And a response came into it. So, and the author is somebody who knows my dad. And a response came into it from, you know, and it's some account, and, you know, you can't really tell if this is a real person or not, but, you know, I look at his bio and it's like Jesus lover, reformed, yada, yada. Honestly, if somebody has reformed in their bio, I've learned to be skeptical of them despite being reformed myself.
Yeah.
And it's basically this incoherent response that was like, maybe somebody should tell your dad how wrong he is and his theology has led a lot of people astray. And now there are people starving and dying in Ukraine. And I was like, I'm accustomed to people telling me why my dad's theology is bad. Whether or not I agree with them, that's a fairly commonplace thing. I didn't totally follow the leap from bad theology to people are dying in Ukraine. And I, not to make light of that, but I was like, that's a bridge too far for my intellect. Struggling with that one. So my response to this was just to block the guy. It's like, I don't have a smart aleck response. This is certainly not a conversation I want to get into. He's hijacking a tweet about something else. Like, I wasn't even like, happy birthday, dad, or something where my dad is mentioned. That one was just a quick block, and, you know, he can go rage against that. The ones that throw me, though, and I suspect other people close to prominent pastors, you know, Tim Keller's family or Matt Chandler's family, if they're on social media, get the same thing. But people who take joy in telling me how my dad's theology has ruined their life, that's a fun one for me, you know, and by fun, I mean really not fun at all. But so I heard from a lady who I tweeted something about faith and doubt, maybe. And she basically gleefully wished me to go take a different path than my dad. She's like, it just sounds like you're discovering so many things that will lead you away from the harmful path of this. And your dad's theology led my life into this route or this route and a broken marriage and these things. And I'm like, that sounds terrible. And then she was like, and I've discovered so much life and not believing any of it. And I'm like, wow. There's a lot there. I just responded to her and I was like, you may have misunderstood what I tweeted. Like, my dad and I aren't on the same page about everything, but I like him. I love him. And we more or less agree on a lot of things and then disagree on some things.
Yeah.
And she just kept going. Like, it was like a tweet thread of all the ways she was delighted to no longer believe in any of the things that he espouses. And I just kind of left it at like, okay, you know, just, K. That's my normal response is just the letter K, because it's, I feel like it is non-argumentative and it's very clearly dismissive. And I hope that all of their rage just feels like it went, you know, just fell flat on its face with K. Good hustle.
So
I don't understand the phenomenon of this, though. The phenomenon's a little strong. The compulsion. Yeah. To share with somebody all of this thing about how their loved one has ruined your life.
Yeah. So, Ron, you can weigh in on this. Like, aspirationally, does the person want an argument? Like, would their sort of ideal response from you be something that triggers an argument? Or are they wanting you to say, oh my gosh, finally somebody said it. Thank you. You know, like, what are they looking for? It just seems to be a weird phenomenon that I would put into the bucket of like, we just have access to too many people now. Because 25 years ago, yeah. you would never know that this person existed. You know, Ron, what do you think's going on there?
Yeah, it's gosh, it's so confusing. I mean, it you know, to go after to have a problem with somebody, but go after their son or their daughter to address the problem. It just confounds my mind. Like in terms of like, what is it that you're trying to accomplish, and why are you taking shots? I mean, like it's so funny that like we can't separate people from people. I mean, obviously Barnabas is John's son, but Barnabas is not responsible for any, even if he agrees with everything John says, he's not responsible for anything John has said.
Right.
And it's like for him to sort of bear the weight of anything that his dad has done, and to have people not understand that when they go after him, they're not really accomplishing anything.
Yeah.
Other than sort of like airing their own grievances. You just kind of think like, hey, where does some just like basic level of like Christian charity, like Christian, like not even just some general like level of you know emotional intelligence like comes into the picture. It just mm-hmm. feels baffling to me. Like I literally don't understand. Like who does that is what I say. Like who are the people that do this?
You know? Yeah, yeah. Pipe. Who are the people that do this? Like what do you think is going on there?
I think there are people who I think the attachment to Christian celebrity is a big piece of it, because they put way too much stock in what anybody says, which also means they put too much stock in what I think about what they say, which is I don't care. But so for example, I mean, the example that I shared from yesterday is an extreme one, where it's like your dad's theology has led to a global, you know, upheaval. Well, I mean, only if he's God. So there's putting way too much weight in it. You know, your dad's theology ruined my life. Well, at what point are you responsible for saying this isn't going so great? I wonder if I should read somebody else. I should listen to somebody else. And you know, and again, if there are people who are suffering, I'm not trying to downplay that, but there's just a sort of attaching of responsibility and blame to those who have voices in a way that that sort of shirks personal awareness, responsibility, and it's a really the anger behind it is weird. I could list off the top of my head 6 or 7 people who I think their theology is harmful, their platform is harmful, their politics are harmful, whatever. I don't think any of them are ruining the world. I think they should shut up. I wish they didn't say what they were saying. I think there are people who are being led astray by them. But like, I'm not going to go to their kids and be like, your dad is leading people to misery. You know, honestly, if I met their kids, I'd probably be like, can we be friends? Like, let's hang out and let's figure out what it's like to be the children of these loud voices up here. And it's a... But yeah, I think the attachment to the celebrity voice skews everything. And then what you said about access is another thing, because, you know, in the 80s or 90s, if somebody wrote a book, let's take like Purpose Driven Life by Rick Warren, which was a book that was fairly innocuous. It wasn't very controversial, except that very reformed people hated it because it wasn't theologically dense enough. But if somebody felt that way and they're like, Rick Warren is leading people into a soft gospel and they don't believe in hell and whatever else, they don't have a way to tweet at his kids. They just sort of yell into the ether until blogs existed, and then they blogged into the ether. And and so the ability to track down the individual it creates a really odd dynamic for sure.
Yeah, it really does. And yeah, it makes you wonder if this kind of thing is ever going to go away. You know, or if this is just one of the kind of collateral damages of fame now, that, you know, one day your kids are going to have to deal with it, or you know, maybe you're going to have to keep dealing with it in perpetuity. Do you and your pops ever talk about it? Like, is this sort of like dinner table conversation for you two, or not so much?
No, because I feel an obligation to protect him. Like, I don't want him to feel guilty because somebody comes at me on Twitter because of something he wrote years ago. Like, why is that his fault that some idiot came at me? That's so I don't want him to turn to me and be like, I'm so sorry you're going through this. I'm like, I'm not going through anything. And you don't need to be aware of this. We've talked about it in general where he has sort of given a generalized, like, I know that there's a spotlight on you guys kind of thing. But yeah, I don't, I feel like if I can be the dead end for these things, that's probably better.
Yeah.
Because the other responses that I get are like from people who are, you know, friends of mine or are, you know, lean more friendly, you know, they're social media friends, if you will. And they respond and they're like, I'm so sorry you have to deal with this. And I'm like, I mean, it's not my favorite thing, but it's a, it doesn't ruin my Thursday. It just sort of exists. And so then having to like deal with their emotions because they're now mad at this other person who's mad. And I'm like, let's just not be mad. Let's just pretend this didn't happen.
Yeah.
That's always a weird dynamic too.
Yeah. It's crazy. People love being mad and they love letting other people know that they're mad. And I don't know. It's weird. Which is why I guess to bring it around to Vegas and Top Gun, more and more, I'm really intrigued by settings where nobody's mad. You know what I mean? Like, for 2.5 hours in that movie theater, like, nobody was mad. Everybody was just kind of delighted. And nobody really goes to Vegas to get mad. I guess people get mad when their bets don't come in or whatever. And there are mad people there for sure. But, like, I don't know. In general, everybody's kind of there to have a good time. And I don't know. The older I get, the more I'm drawn to settings like that and churches like that, you know, which by God's grace, I'm in one of those and that's a joyful place for me too. But fascinating stuff, boys. We should probably close the ep and then knock out a quick Patreon. Boys, we've done what we always do on this program in that we've wandered to and fro throughout some different but intriguing topics. And until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
You're fearfully and wonderfully made. God looks at your heart, not your gene size. Do you know the verses, yet still stress over your body? Oh, I get it. I was raised in church, but I struggled with food, eating disorders, and my body for decades. I'm Heather Creekmore, host of the Compared To You podcast, where we talk about all things body image and comparison from a biblical perspective. We get real about the pressure to focus on appearance in a culture where looks seem to matter most. Whether you're wrestling wrinkles or battling the scale, Compared To You is the show for you. You'll laugh a little and be encouraged a lot. If you're ready to stop comparing and start living, visit lifeaudio.com to listen and subscribe.